This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, heard every Saturday morning at 9 on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740. Welcome, friend, to our weekly garden party. We hope you brought along your questions, because it's time to dish the dirt. On The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
Yes, good morning and welcome to The Garden Show on Zoomer Radio with Charlie Dobbin, aided and abetted by yours truly, Dean Holland. How are you this morning, Charlie?
I am over the moon. 25 millimeters of rain.
Yes, it is so important. You know, rain gets a bad rap sometimes. Oh, the rain. But I said, you have to have that balance, right? Well, you have to have the balance.
We tend to go yin or yang on that. So it's been weeks. I don't remember the last time we had rain. We've had a forecast. We've had weather alerts. We've had rain warnings. We've had stay home. Don't go out. It's going to rain so hard.
But no drops.
No drops. So thank goodness the forecasters and the everything worked in our favor overnight last night. So yes, indeed, my plants are purring.
Excellent. And you and I had a good. You were great last week, by the way, at the CNE. I enjoyed hearing you chat.
Thank you.
So that was lots of fun. And Charlie, we can tell everybody that you and I had about 3.5 hours to sort of tootle around the CNE. I hadn't been for a long time, for like decades.
Me neither.
Because I didn't grow up in the Toronto area. And it was so much fun. And I did go home with a 15-inch diameter donut, which was the talk of the people we were working with at the at the stage.
It was in a pizza box. It was so big. And when we were trying to cut through the crowds, you were like, no, I can't turn my box sideways.
No.
I have to keep it flat.
Yeah.
So I was like clearing the path for us to get through.
It was important because you're right. You couldn't just put it under your arm and do it sideways. And it did take 3 days here at the house to eat. I didn't actually cut into it on Saturday at all. We admired it. It sat on the table. We broke into it Sunday morning. Anyway, the rest is history.
Yeah.
So
nice.
Other than the rain, what is happening in your garden? What's going on? Like, obviously, you know, like what's coming up big and strong or being harvested? What's going on?
Oh, at my place, gosh, the harvest continues. It's you should see me. Between the carrots and the eggplants and the kale, I'm just a cooking machine. I'm coming up with every cool recipe I can find that's just, you know, really sort of fun and tasty and full of freshness. Lots of herbs here. So, yeah, using them all because now's the time to grab them. I've got red peppers very soon. Going to have a bushel of those to deal with, too. So, yeah, it's been a great. But I have been watering my vegetables, just to be clear. You'll never get a harvest without water. So my well goes down, but my vegetables thrive. Hopefully this rain will percolate down to the well, and that'll make a difference. But, you know, speaking of the X, while we were there, it was kind of cool. There's the Heritage Court is what it's called, off of the Enercare Center. That's where they always hold the competition, or the shows, the horticultural shows. I shouldn't say always, but they have in my lifetime, that's where they've always been. There is a horticulture building, which I think was a very important part of the X 50 years, 60, 70 years ago, but now not so much. It's more ornamental, though we did see a vegetable competition going on with tomatoes and rutabagas and all kinds of rhubarb and all that stuff. But that there was dahlias and mums being shown. It is that time of year. So you mentioned you just purchased a mum, and I'm sure many of our listeners will have as well. But I just want to remind people that if you love dahlias and you want to see exquisite plants, there are two important events coming up. One is the Hamilton District Chrysanthemum and Dahlia Society meeting. And that, I just lost it. I had it. Yes, I did. Not that one. Jeez. Sorry, I really did have it.
I'll tell you what, you know what we'll do, Charlie? We'll go to break. Okay. Again, give the numbers out first, and then we'll get to that as soon as we get back. If you give us a call at 416-360-0740, or if you live outside Toronto, anywhere within the province of Ontario, 1-866-740-4740. Of course, let Ashy know if you're a first-time caller. I'll give you your garden wings. We want you to call often, call early, call right now, and one question per call, please. We will be right back with much more on The Garden Show.
Fur and feathers and bugs of all size. There's more going on in the garden than you realize. Should small creatures become a big problem, then you've got The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin. Exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
Yes, we are back here on The Garden Show. And before we get to our callers, Charlie, you had you want to finish that announcement? Yeah, that you had.
Yes, finish being the operative word. Thank you. So today and tomorrow, great way to spend a rainy day. Get down to the Royal Botanical Gardens, which is at 680 Plains Road West in Burlington. And all day today and tomorrow up until 3 o'clock, there's a dahlia flower show brought to you by the Hamilton Dahlia Society. So, of course, your admission into the RBG gets you into the show. If you go tomorrow, remember with these shows, they always auction off the blooms at the end. So it can be a very cool way to get a hold of a stem of something that you're hankering after or wishing you had in your possession. As well, the Canadian Chrysanthemum and Dahlia Show, that annual flower show is happening in Toronto next September the 14th. So that, I guess, would be next Saturday from noon until 4. The location is the Agricola Finnish Lutheran Church, which is 25 Old York Mills Road in North York. So that's along Yonge Street. Cool thing about this one, of course, is there's free parking, no admission. And again, bouquets and all show blooms will be available for purchase at the end of the show. So from 12 to noon, next Saturday. So get your fill of dahlia blooms.
Okay. And during the next break, we'll talk about the dahlia bloom that we saw that I'm sure there would be, if it was available, many people would be bidding on because it was just incredible. But right now, let's go to our first caller. We have Sandra on the line from Etobicoke. Welcome to The Garden Show, Sandra.
Good morning, Charlie and Dean. I just wish I had the rain you'd had.
Oh, really?
We didn't get that much here in Etobicoke. We seem to miss it. Anyway, that's not my question. My question is about lawn maintenance. I have three things I need to do: nematodes, fall fertilizing, and seeding. What order should I do them in, or can I do them all?
Same day? I wouldn't. No.
I don't expect to do them on the same day. I'm just wondering, when I should do them and, how long. A week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks between.
Okay. So what I would do is I'd prioritize the nematodes. If you've had grub issues in your lawn last spring or in the past, or you can see patches of yellow turf, starts as like a loony-sized yellow dead bit. And if you watch that loony-sized yellow patch, it will grow, it'll expand over time, which tells you that there are little tiny baby grubs eating the roots of the lawn. And of course, they're eating out from the center, making the patch larger and larger, and eating the roots and killing the grass, also fattening up along the way. So nematodes, I would prioritize, follow the instructions to the letter when you're using them. You probably don't need to put them all over your entire lawn, but do put them where you suspect grubs could be based on history, and get them into the ground. Water them in. I'd wait probably about a week or so, though there's no rush on that. You know what? Once they're watered in, and you want to do some, you said overseeding. So sure, at any point after the nematodes have been applied, they will percolate down in the water. That's the idea. Water takes the little nematode eggs down below the surface to the grubs. So now you can be out on the lawn, walking around, top dressing, overseeding, doing whatever you need to do, patching up thin areas and, fixing up the lawn so that it looks really good. Always watch the weather, hope for rain, or get your sprinkler out and keep that grass seed moist once you've got that down and in position. Fall fertilizing, we're going to wait on that. I usually wait till end of October, early November. No rush on fall fertilizing, but we definitely want to get it on before winter.
And it's okay to put the fertilizer on over the seeding. So if it...
Sure. If you're seeding now and the seeds should germinate within 10 to 14 days, so that takes us up to the third week of September, and the little seedlings will be growing in the... It'll be warm. We'll have sunny days. And by the end of October, early November, you're fine. We just don't want just germinated seedlings being fertilized because they tend to burn. But once they've been there a month or so, they're fine.
And I've heard this talk about winter seeding where people seed and then they want the snow on top of it. Sounds a little strange. I don't know if it really works.
It can work if you have a flat area. I would never winter seed on the slope because as the snow melts and the spring rains fall, they will wash the seed down the slope. But no, for sure. I mean, I know people, they've got planted grass seed in, you know, January, February. And the idea is that the seed will sit there until the conditions are right for it to grow. Make sure, of course, that the birds don't take it away in the meantime. And the seed will, like I say, should go down dormant, stay dormant until it's warm enough for the seed to grow.
Okay, great. Thank you, Charlie.
Welcome.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for the call there, Sandra. Okay, let's give out those numbers again. 416-360-0740. That's the number you use if you live in Toronto. And if you don't live in Toronto, but still within the province of Ontario, here's the 1-800 number you want to use, 1-866-740-4740. We'll be right back with much more on The Garden Show.
Daffodils and daisies, bluebells and begonias, forsythia and foxgloves, marigolds, magnolia, lavender and lupins, dahlias, delphiniums, stocks, fox, hollyhocks, tulips and sweet williams.
You've picked the right place for everything floral. This is The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
Yes, indeed. We are back here on The Garden Show on this seventh day of September. My goodness, the first Saturday of September. And it is feeling like very September-y weather, I have to say. The temperature is feeling a bit. This morning up here in Collingwood, it said it was feeling like 9. And of course, we've got the rain and the overcast skies. So yeah, feeling a little bit September, a little bit fallish, even though it's still summer for another couple of weeks.
I know, but I think it's the shorter days that are starting to bug me. I don't mind the cool. I love the cool weather and I love the rain. But it's pitch dark by 8:30.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, well, here we are. Okay, you know, we're going to go to our next caller. We have a caller from Aurora on the line. We have Seymour. And Seymour, welcome to The Garden Show.
Thank you very much, sir. I enjoy listening to your show every Saturday morning.
Thank you.
My question, when is the ideal time to prune a magnolia? Is it in the fall or in the spring? Or otherwise?
No, so here's the rule to always write it down, so you put it on your mirror on a post-it note so you can see it every day. The rule is we prune flowering shrubs because magnolia is a form of a flowering shrub. We prune them when they finish flowering. Okay. So because magnolia normally bloom in the spring, you might tell me, but I have some blooming now. I do too. I've had my magnolia blooming on and off all summer. But it should bloom early in the spring. And once it's finished blooming, which will be, you know, mid-spring, then we do whatever pruning we want to do at that point.
Okay, that's wonderful. I do appreciate the information.
My pleasure. Thanks for calling.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Alrighty. And it looks like our next caller is Ivana, or she'll tell me her name, Fergus, but she's calling about a bloomerang lilac bush. Good morning.
Good morning. It's Ina.
Ina, thank you.
It bloomed nicely this spring, and I did not prune it because when I pruned it last year, it was new last year, it didn't bloom again. But I didn't prune it. Now, the branches or the stems are about 20 inches long, and they bloomed again, about 15 of them. They're just finishing bloom, and I wonder, do I prune them now or wait until spring? And how far do I prune them? Because these branches are about 20 inches long.
Right, so they're kind of flopping, are they? They're just really getting gangly?
They're not getting dangly. They're standing up straight.
Okay. But do you want to keep that plant at a certain size?
It can certainly be allowed to grow quite a bit from what it is now.
Okay. All right. So that just asking those questions just to get a better sense. And of course, your timing is perfect because Seymour, who just called, was wondering about when to prune a magnolia. And I said right after it flowers. But of course, you're calling about but a flowering shrub called a bloomering lilac, which is an ever-blooming shrub. So when does it ever finish where you can do that pruning that we talk about? So this one can be a bit of a challenge. If you're trying to keep it in a tight place, like a, it wants to be about 8 feet by 8 feet. So if it can grow to that size, then you don't have to worry too much about, you know, when do you prune and how do you prune. If you want to keep it under control or, you know, maximize the blooms, what I've learned, because I have one as well, is after that first flush of blooms, because you will get that typical May, mid-May lilac bloom or late May, depending on the spring. So the normal time for lilacs, it'll bloom then. Yeah. Once those blooms are finished, they, instead of being like a setting seeds and doing a really obvious dead look to them, they just kind of shrivel up a bit. They just get a little bit crispy. And if you look at the base of where those blooms were, now two more little leaves start to grow and two more blooms will start to grow. So if you want to maximize blooms, you go out there with very persnickety, slow process of cutting off each of the first flush of blooms when they're finished. That's all you're going to do. That's all you're going to prune. You're not going to worry about taking leaves or anything like that, just those finished blooms, and you'll get a lovely second flush. And if you're lucky, even a third and a fourth right up till Christmas. If you want to control the size of the plant, however, because it's getting too big, then you'd have to prune in harder after that first flush of blooms. You'd prune right back. And again, that would slow down your, you wouldn't maximize your blooms, but it would certainly, you could shape the plant and keep it a little better size.
Okay, but these stems that are up, they're not in a nice thick growth. So I would like to prune them now if I could. Is that
I wouldn't.
No,
I never prune a lilac in the fall.
Okay.
If you don't have to, I mean, if it's really, if they're in danger of breaking in the wind or the snow, then yes. If they are blocking a walkway, then yes. Or sidewalk, yes. You have to prune in the fall when it comes to lilacs. But if you don't have to, I would wait till the spring.
Okay. That's all okay. I wanted to know. Thank you very much.
You're very welcome.
Thanks very much for the call. Charlie, you got an email I want to just mention because this made me smile. You got an email from Shirley and Gary, longtime listeners of your show. And it must be from Gary. Gary said he was on holidays with his wife to hot and sunny Halifax. And while there, he purchased a local paper, The Herald. And he says, as usual, he does puzzles. As a pastime, he proceeded to do the crypto quote, and to his amazement, the answer made me think of your show. And I quote, the hum of the bees is the voice of the garden. And the, and Gary lives in Frankfurt, Ontario.
Yeah, but that's great. I love that. We should, you know, embroider that into doilies or pillows or, you know, hang it on the wall. The hum of the bees is the voice of the garden.
Yeah, and speaking of which, there was an article on Blog TO that I was chatting about this week about, of course, the influx of wasps, which remember when we were at the CNE, we saw them around the slush mobile, you know, of course.
Did we ever?
Remember just swatting them away? Well, and I guess, you know, they really bother a lot of people. I've dealt with them for years, and they're just, they're kind of like glorified flies. And they're important because they do still pollinate. But right now, I guess the article that I was reading was saying that there's a lot of natural food that is scarce for them. So this is why they're after, they go after sugary things, and they'll go after your food. And but as soon as the cold weather comes, they'll disappear again.
Right, because the wasps, from what I've learned, the queen is who survives the winter. All the little drones and workers die. So the queen will hunker down and go dormant for the winter underground, depending on the kind, because there's so many different kinds. So in the spring, she starts laying eggs and they start hatching, and the population is quite small. But as the summer continues, she's laying eggs every day, all the time. As long as the food is coming back into the nest with the drones bringing back the sugar, sugar, the carbohydrates, the water to feed those little baby, those eggs that she's laying and who are hatching, then yes, the population increases dramatically. So that's why we see them in large quantities now. And yes, anybody sitting in an outdoor patio knows it's late summer.
Yeah. My experience with them, and obviously it's not a guarantee, my experience over the years is that I've never been stung by one. And even that girl at the scene, she just swatted them away. She had about 50 around her, and she just routinely swatted them away. They're like, they're a bit dumb this time of year, right? Because they're just kind of dopey.
Yeah, if it's cooler weather particularly, because temperature very much affects insects. Their whole physiology, all of their life systems are based on temperature.
Gotcha. Okay. Numbers again, 416-360-0740 or 1-866-740-4740. We have a caller on the line from Mississauga. Welcome to the Garden Show, Narissa.
Thank you.
Hey, how are you? What do you got for? Oh, and you're a first-time caller, Narissa.
Yes, I am.
Okay, well, I'm
going to get to work.
There you go, your garden wings. Welcome to the Garden Show.
Thanks. Hi, Charlie.
Morning.
My call is about my hybrid roses. I have quite a number of them at the front of the garden, and they're over 40 years old. But this year, I noticed they've grown over 6 feet. I have a purple sand cherry. They actually grew up through the purple sand cherry, coming out to the top. And I do prune them back in the spring. Sometimes I prune them back at the end of the fall. I did give them food just in the spring this year. That's the only time. And I just don't understand why it has grown so high
this year. So could be just, you know, where you live, you got more than the average amount of rainfall. Is that possible?
I don't know. I'm in Mississauga, so I don't know if it's because of the rainfall, but it's the first time in 40 years this has happened.
They've grown like that. Okay. Did they flower profusely? Did you get lots of great flowers?
Lots.
Okay. And they were what you were expecting? The flowers looked like what you were expecting?
Yes. They were nice and big.
Okay, good. Because sometimes you mentioned hybrid roses, I'm assuming hybrid tea roses.
Yes.
Sometimes when they grow like crazy, it's because these are grafted roses, right? So our chosen rose, which is a named cultivar, it might be Peace, it might be Queen Elizabeth, it's some named rose, is grafted onto the roots of a much more vigorous wild type rose. And so sometimes when our hybrid tea roses take off, it's because the root is growing, and that's like suckers off the root. And so very, very thorny, but not great flowers.
Oh.
So that would be something to look at. I mean, there's a real big difference between the rootstock flowers and the chosen tea rose flowers. It's called a Rosa multiflora. It's a five-petaled flower. So instead of all those poofy double and triple petaled rose flowers you'll get on your tea roses, the rootstock will give you a simple rose flower with 5 petals. Typically it's red and white, so it might just be white, and or it might just be red, but lots and lots of thorns and flowers, but they're small and simple.
Okay. Now, should I cut those roses back again in the fall or in the spring?
Okay, I don't. When I back 100 years ago when I went to university, we learned this rule on roses. You're laughing. It was at least 100 years ago. Well, let's just say it was a century ago.
Okay. That.
The rule, and of course, this rule came out of the UK. The rule with roses was you cut them to your knees in the fall and your ankles in the spring.
Oh.
However, so you can do that. It certainly won't kill them to do that. I would always cut roses to my knees in the fall if, as I was saying with Ina regarding her lilac, if roses are too big, too tall, they're dangerous. They're going to hurt somebody. They're going to, you know, whip around in the wind. I used to have roses by my garage leading up to my front door, and they'd get really big over the summer. And it was so funny because at Halloween, the kids would be all dressed in their costumes and they'd come walking up my walkway. And the kids who had capes and, you know, big costumes, they'd get caught in the roses, right? And they were like stuck there forever. So it was like, okay. So I used to always cut those down before Halloween, but never too low, just to the knees. And then okay. In the spring, hard prune right down to the ankles.
Okay, thank you very much.
Okay. Thanks, Narissa.
Thanks for calling.
I was just getting this picture of every November 1st, Charlie Dobbin had to wake up in the morning and go out and release the trick-or-treaters who were
exactly.
stuck in rose bushes from the night
exactly.
before.
Exactly. Oh, totally. It's good vision because it was pretty much like that.
And giving out trick-or-treats on October 31st and breakfast on November 1st exactly. to the ones that were left.
Go home. What are you doing in the front walkway? Are right. you lost or something?
That is so funny.
Scissors to cut them out.
Okay, so we seem to have at least temporarily a little rose theme happening because we just got off the phone talking about roses. I believe our next caller is calling about roses, and her name is Rosalie. Welcome to the Garden Show from Hamilton. How are you, Rosalie?
Good morning. I'm fine. How are you both?
We're well. Morning. We're wonderful.
Great. With the roses, it's interesting this year that they seem to be blooming, no problem, but the leaves seem to be off of them or lost. I've checked the plant. I don't see any insects on them. Maybe they're so minute I can't see them. I've looked for aphids. I've looked for anything, any leaf that's there. So I don't know what's causing it or what I can do to help it. Or
okay. So... All right, so what's happened if you don't see any leaves? Remember, aphids don't eat leaves. They just suck juice. So yes. aphids will never affect the status of your leaves. Okay. They will affect the status of your flowers, however. So mm-hmm. if your roses have defoliated early, yes. which is not unusual in a very hot, humid summer, it's because the leaves had, probably don't have it anymore now, a fungal disease called black spot.
Okay.
And it all starts with the little yellow spots on the leaves that eventually coalesce, turn black, the leaves drop, and they'll blow away in the wind or they'll sit at ground level. If you have leaves kicking around at ground level, I would do everything in my power to clean them up. They okay. are a source of inoculum for more fungal disease either this fall or next spring. So clean up any leaves that have fallen early. Don't worry. The roses look silly without leaves on them. Mm-hmm. You know, that's a sort of a, skinny, like little, it's just a look with the flower on the top that isn't great. You do want the leaves if you can. Mm-hmm. So next year's a whole new opportunity. Next year there'll be new leaves. So next year you'll try and do some preventative maintenance to try and keep the leaves in place before they become infected with black spot. And that's really a fungicide. And the fungicide is usually a spray. It's a sulfur-based spray. And you'll use it before and after every rain event in an effort to protect the leaves from falling off early. But at the end of the day, it won't hurt the rose. It's those leaves are done now.
Okay. And what type of fungicide would I get? Like an insecticide soap or...
No, because insecticide soap is for insects. So you want something that's just for fungus. And it'll say right on it, garden fungicide. Actually, in the next break, I'll look it up. You keep listening and I'll see.
Okay.
I'll see what's out there. I haven't purchased one in a long time. But we used to use rose dust and all kinds of things to protect our roses, but those things don't exist anymore. So now we're a little more limited in what we can do to prevent fungal problems.
Okay. All right. Perfect. Thank you very much.
Okay.
Have a good day.
Thanks, Rosalie. Thanks for the call.
Okay.
I remember that, Charlie. I remember growing up and seeing neighbors' roses with a bit of dust. And in fact, my parents probably even had one of those. Like it was like a kind of a gun that you would put it in there and it would spray the dust out, right?
It's really ugly.
Yeah.
It made the roses look really stupid.
Yeah. Yeah. Was it a sulfur-based thing?
No. It was Carbaryl was the fungicide, and then it also usually had an insecticide mixed in, probably diazinon. So it was both a fungicide and an insecticide, so it protected your roses from insects, killed insects on contact, made the roses somewhat toxic to anything that came along to bite them, and it prevented fungal problems, but it looked really stupid.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I'm not doing that. I've never done, but you brought back a memory for sure.
Yeah,
I hadn't thought of that. As soon as you said powder, I thought, this takes me back to the 70s.
In wet,
like 75 years ago. So,
well, there you go. Another century. So, no, I mean, I worked in a garden center for many, many years. And when we had wet, like every year you had certain things that came on big time. So there'd be the year of the earwig one year, or there'd be the year of rain. And you'd get all kinds of problems with the roses and the fruit trees. And there'd be the year of peach leaf curl. There'd always be something that everybody who came in would be carrying a little plastic bag. And I would just stand. We had a wall of chemicals, and I'd stand by the wall of chemicals going, you want this, and you want this, and you want this. And they'd line up for, you know, 20 people.
Wonderful. Go to the DTT section over there. Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, we had that too.
Wow. Things that we just don't do anymore. There we go. Okay. Okay. You know what? We have lots of room on the lines. Give us a call, 416-360-0740 or 1-866-740-4740. We will be right back with much more on The Garden Show.
Don't change stations just because the weather changes. Garden tips and advice all year round. This is The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
Yes, indeed, we are back here on The Garden Show on this very fallish kind of feeling summer day. Yeah, but again, Charlie, you're happy about the rain that you got. We're happy. I'm happy about the rain that we're getting right now. Yeah. Because it saves me having to put those sprinklers out. I've got some grass seed down in some different patches of the lawn.
Okay. Yep.
And
yep,
so, so I'm, and these are good days for growing grass. Yes.
Perfect. Perfect. Soil is nice and warm.
Yep.
Air is perfect temperature, not too hot. And then you get that moisture, and those seeds will be boom before you know.
Excellent.
It.
Love it. But okay, you wanted to do an update on something you were talking about. Yeah.
I was going to say, before I go to the next caller, Rosalie was wondering about what she could have sprayed her roses with to avoid black spot in the future. Well, there's all kinds of stuff out there. It just depends what you're looking for. A bottle that's got a little trigger on it, a spray bottle, is what we call a ready to use. So it's already been mixed, it's ready to go, and there's all kinds of them out there. There's one I just looked at. What was it? Safers, of course, will make ready to use. The one I'm just looking at here is made by Green Earth, and it's available all over the place. Green Earth, ready to use garden fungicide. So that's a liquid which is sulfur based, but there's also the old dust fungicides. Safers makes a dust fungicide. Sulfur dust, it's a fungicide and a miticide, so many of these say. So Canadian Tire looks like they've got all kinds of stuff. Walmart, just looking quickly on Google and seeing all kinds of different fungicides coming up at different garden centers. So, yeah, head off to your local home store or, of course, where you are. Terra Greenhouses is great, great place to shop in the Hamilton area, Rosalie. So check out what they've got. Put it on your shelf now so you'll have it ready to go next year.
Great. Okay. I have a sneaky suspicion that our theme might be continuing. We're going to go to Bob now from Toronto. Welcome to The Garden Show, Bob.
Yeah. Good afternoon or morning or whatever it is.
Morning. Yeah.
Oh, thanks. I have a question for you. I have some roses. I've had them for years. But for some reason this year, the leaves are all turning yellow and black and they fall off. And then you get that little tiny worm that burrows into the bud. Is there something I could spray to prevent that or just start over?
No, if you've had these roses for years, I mean, they're healthy, good roses other than the infestation by pests.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're strong and healthy. Okay, so if you want to have good roses, good solid roses, sometimes it comes down to the varieties we chose. Years ago, there weren't as many choices there was beautiful roses, but they weren't as resistant to some of the problems that roses tend to get into. So if I was buying roses now, I'd be looking at some of the resistant varieties, resistant to fungal diseases like black spot, which is why you're seeing spots on the leaves. There's a whole series called the Knockout Series. They came out of the United States, but they're hardy, they're vigorous. They come in multicolors. They're actually, believe it or not, the number one selling rose because they are so low maintenance. Instead of being like a rose where we have to coddle them, they're just a flowering shrub, and they will just flower all summer if you plant them in full sun, fertile, well-drained soil. Well-drained being important. Roses do not ever want to be in a soggy spot. So lots of sun, well-drained, reasonably fertile soil to avoid issues in the future. Ensure that your location is correct in the spring, pruning and fertilizing. So that's rose food. That's a granular feed the chickens kind of a, around the rose, or top dress, or both, with a composted manure. Keep that soil fertile, healthy, alive, and ensure that the roses are not being cramped by other plants, that the sun is penetrating. That's what your pruning is all about. You prune your roses so that sun gets in, air gets in. You'll have fewer fungal diseases if your plants, your rose plants, are pruned to grow wide rather than all dense and bunched into the center. So yeah, pruning is an important part of rose growing to avoid fungal diseases, and fertilizing is important to keep them happy, healthy, strong, vigorous, and not infested by insects. Some insects, I think if the buds were giving you problems, you're getting that knocked over, the bud sort of starts, but then it kind of keels over and never opens. That's an insect called, it's funny, it's thrips. They're called thrips. If there's one thrips and there's two thrips, it's like one moose, two moose. So thrips are an insect that have crazy little mouth that's like almost like a razor blade with a raspy edge, and they rasp into the buds and lay eggs and kill the buds before they open. And thrips are really hard to control or avoid. The best thing is keep your plants healthy, vigorous, and not likely to be attacked.
Just one more question. I noticed that some of the nurseries now, they're not guaranteeing their roses past September. They used to be a year or 2 years. Is that a sign we should switch to something else?
No, you know what? I don't think that's different. I think most nurseries have never guaranteed roses beyond the first season. You're thinking back to the white rose nursery days where we guaranteed, because I was there for 18 years, guaranteed everything for 2 years except annuals. And roses were not considered an annual. They were considered a long-term plant unless you lived in Sudbury, and then they were treated as an annual. So, that one season guarantee is very common. You know what, like I said, if you're replacing roses or buying roses, look for the newer varieties with lots of resistance bred into them.
Okay, Bob, thanks for the call. And good luck with your roses. I got to run to our next commercial break, but we will be right back with much more on The Garden Show.
Fur and feathers and bugs of all size. There's more going on in the garden than you realize. Should small creatures become a big problem, then you've got The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin. Exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
Oh, yes, indeed. We are here back on The Garden Show. And during the break, we were talking about lots of gardening things with Ashy and with Anthony, who's joined us as well, and in studio with Ashy. And one of the things we always laugh this time of year, it's fair to say you made a bit of a backhanded remark to me about amaryllis, but
because you're just like one of our callers. It's like, Charlie, what do I do about my amaryllis?
I know, you'd think I'd have it by now, right?
You would think.
I have mine outside.
Me too.
And all of a sudden I just thought, it's been out all summer long, and I've been watering it and letting that bulb get beefy through the photosynthesis and all that stuff. So is it about now that I should be bringing it inside, because how much rest does it need in the dark?
Okay, so just so you know, just yesterday I was looking at my amaryllis, and mine have beefed up, you're right, bigger, you know, more solid in their limited soil in those pots. Yep. But of course, I have chipmunks, and they plant sunflowers everywhere. So I was pulling sunflower, believe it or not, what will be 12-foot sunflowers out of the amaryllis pots that are growing. So the main thing with the amaryllis, for those of you that have them outside or inside, keep them in the sun for now. Keep them in the window or outside where they are, but stop watering. Let's pull back on the water on those amaryllis. Let's let them dry down. The leaves will start to turn yellow. Do not panic. Let the leaves turn yellow. Some people think it's nice to have them out for some cool nights because that helps set them into dormancy quicker. So we can wait probably another week or 10 days. Then it's time to go into the pitch dark. But no water between now and then.
Okie dokie. Okay, and what about those leaves? Will they look after themselves, or do we trim them off when we bring them in?
they will turn yellow and crispy and fall off eventually. Okay. I don't like to cut things off unless they're ready to be cut off. So let them just do their natural, because there's a physiological process of the bulb. It's awake right now with the leaves, right? So we want it to go to sleep. And that sleep or dormant period has to be eight weeks, 10 weeks long before we're going to get flowers. So let that dormant period happen naturally. Don't force it with scissors and refrigerators and all kinds of silly stuff. Just stop watering. Pretend you live in South Africa and there's no more rain and it's the dry season, and dry up. Let them just dry up and then into the dark.
Okay. Well, it looks like we are going to, our last caller of the show today is going to be a first-time caller. Welcome to the Garden Show, Mary. How are you?
Oh, I'm fine. Thank you. How are you, everyone?
I'm well. And you're calling from North York, is that right?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay, I'm going to give you your garden wings because we love our first-time callers. There you go. You earned them.
Oh, thank
you. Good morning. Welcome to the show.
Good morning. Charlie, I've been listening to you from when you had your show on television. So it's been nice. You're always so helpful. Anyways, I have what do you call them now? Oh, my mind went blank.
You said jasmine is okay.
And it's not blooming. It's growing very nicely, but it's not blooming. I bought it for an indoor plant because I live in a condo. When I first purchased it, it was only in a 4-inch pot. And as it progressed, I've put it into, I would say, a 10-inch pot. Now, it's on the balcony because I thought if it's not blooming, maybe I should just throw it outside and see what happens. Mm-hmm. But it's still not blooming. So what am I doing wrong?
Okay. So you bought it, was at a 4-inch pot, you said, and then you went to a 10-inch pot?
Well, progressively. Now it's in a 10-inch pot because it's gross. It's a beautiful plant. It has all these runners that look like it wants to be helped, you know. But it's only green, and when I purchased it, it had these beautiful little flowers that smelled so beautiful.
I know, they're gorgeous, really fragrant. So, number one, as a houseplant, so when you're moving plants up into bigger pots, make sure that what precipitates that move is the fact that roots are growing out the bottom of the initial pot out of the drainage holes. So if you move a plant up too quickly from smaller pots to bigger pots, they basically go into shock and the roots will, like, the plant just kind of sits there for a while, sometimes a very long while. And it will, plants have this thing where they need to, not all are the same, but many plants need to fill the pot with roots before they'll go and move on to the next stage of their up above ground life. So no more transplanting it into bigger pots unless you see roots growing out the bottom. But lots and lots of sun. A jasmine needs to be in a south-facing window if you have such a thing, or get yourself a grow light and provide some bright light on the plant. The other thing is 60 to 75 degrees Fahrenheit is optimal for jasmine. So in the winter, when our houses are hot and dry or the condo is hot and dry, you're going to want to look at ways to cool the air around that plant and increase the humidity, even if it just means a pebble tray below the plant, which is like a cookie sheet with gravel or pebbles. The pot sits on top and there's water in the gravel at all times. And that's going to be really important to ever get flowers. A humidifier works as well, so whatever works. And then, of course, in the winter, less water than in the summer. And make sure the soil feels dry on the surface before you water, particularly in the winter. And make sure it's in a really well-drained soil, like a real barky soil. So moist soil, but no sogginess. It will not like to be soggy. I hope that helps, Mary. I know it's a beautiful plant when it's doing well, but sometimes they can be a bit challenging.
Well, I won't be able to put it in a south window. I face north and northwest, actually. I have a greenhouse area in my kitchen that has the side panels that I'll get the afternoon sun and the morning sun really, really early. But that's all the sun it'll get.
All right. Thank you, Mary. We got to go because we're out of time for the show. But if you don't have sufficient natural light, get yourself some kind of a grow light and put that plant wherever you want in your condo with a light sitting over top of it. Put it on a timer so it's on at least 12 hours a day. Thanks so much. Welcome, Anthony. You did a fine job. Ashy, as always. And Dean, as Thanks. Always. Thank you for all your help and support. Great callers. See you all next week.
This has been an exclusive podcast of The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin. Heard every Saturday morning at 9 on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740.
This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show.